The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Speaker, I'd like to ask members of the House Assembly in joining me in congratulating this year's recipients of the Sambro Spirit Awards and thanking them for their commitment to the community. Thanks to Catherine, Skip, and Danny for all they do to make Sambro such a wonderful community.
Thank everybody very much for those member statements, and I'll just take a couple of seconds here to remind everybody for a question period, which is upcoming, that we were making great progress on our heckling and our respect for the members posing the questions and the ministers answering the questions, and I'll ask us to continue in that vein this morning. So. Now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In June, the Premier's former Director of Communications, Ms. Michelle Coffin, bravely told her story of domestic assaults. When she inquired as to why the Liberal campaign had rehired the person who assaulted her, she was told that the Premier had consulted women's organizations in Nova Scotia before that rehiring was made. I'd like to ask the Premier, will he tell the House today which women's organizations he consulted before that hiring occurred?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable for the question. I believe what he's referring to is there was a former minister who actually was part of, was a minister in our department who made that reference, meeting organizations. But I do want to, again, acknowledge to the member the important issue around violence, particularly sexual violence and domestic violence in the province, why we continue to invest year over year in the sexual assault strategy, the only government in our province to do so. It's why we've continued, Mr. Speaker, to make those important investments, and we'll continue to make sure that we have a conversation about the fact that everyone deserves to be safe in their own environment.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, in fact, Mr. Speaker, it was the member for Halifax Citadel Sable Island who did assure Ms. Coffin that the Premier had consulted with women's organizations before that rehiring occurred. And the fact is, only the Premier can clear up whether that is in fact correct or not. The member for Halifax Citadel Sable Island is quoted as saying, and I'll table the quote, "The Premier called all of the women's organizations and asked what they thought, and they unanimously said that he should be rehired." I'd like to ask the Premier a simple question. Is that statement true?
Sure. The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. What we have, Mr. Speaker, what has been across this province is, again, I want to tell the Honourable Member, in 2013, our government has taken the issue of sexual violence and domestic violence very seriously. We've done so by continuing to invest money to put in, ensure that there's a strategy to deal with it. We just opened the second domestic violence court here, building on the pilot that was in Cape Breton, so we'll now have two. The second one will be in the largest population. We've also, Mr. Speaker, it's been very clear by organizations that have the issue around domestic violence. They have said that when there is a as someone who has perpetrated a crime or perpetrated a violence, that if they take responsibility, continue to go through the process, do what the court has ordered them to do, that they deserve to be actually be able to move back in to find some level of employment, Mr. Speaker, but they need to continue to understand and take full responsibility for their actions.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to think that all members of this House take domestic assault very seriously. That's why Ms. Coffin deserves an answer to the questions that I'm asking the Premier. I have given him two opportunities to tell us quite simply whether he did call women's organizations, as Ms. Coffin was told, or not. Mr. Speaker, the Coast magazine wrote a long expose on this issue, and they, in fact, called women's organizations themselves to ask if they had been contacted. They specifically called Adsom House, Shelter Nova Scotia, the Avalon Sexual Assault Centre, the Transition House Association of Nova Scotia, all contradicted the claims made to Ms. Coffin by the member for Halifax Citadel, Sable Island. So I want to ask the Premier again if he can just simply tell us which version is correct. The version reported in the Coast, whose reporters called those women's organizations, or the story told to Ms. Coffin by the member for Halifax Citadel, Sable Island.
The Honourable Premier.
The Honourable Member for the question. He's very right. All members of this House, I believe, understand the seriousness of this issue. I know this government does. That's why in 2013, from the very beginning, we continued to make investment around sexual assault strategy, Mr. Speaker, continuing to work with organizations across the province to enhance sex and age housing for women fleeing from domestic violence. We need to continue to make sure this conversation goes on in our communities. We need to make sure that our sons recognize as they're growing up, violence is not the method to move forward. We need to understand they need to be caring, loving citizens, part of our province. We need to make sure that everyone in our community feels safe in their own home and in their workplace, and indeed anywhere in our province, Mr. Speaker. That's why we're going to continue to make those investments. The current budget had an additional $1 million to continue to build on that strategy, and we're going to continue to work under the leadership of the Minister of Status of Women and with all of our partners across this province to make sure that this province is a safe place.
I just want to make mention that our rules for our question period do outline that lines of questioning that concern internal party matters, party or election events are not fodder for question period. So I'll just throw that out there for all members' benefits. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Canadian Institute for Health Information released a report which included the information that there are 20 fewer family practice doctors practicing in Nova Scotia today than was the case when the Liberal government first took office. And so I want to ask the Premier, is he troubled by this statistic?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the report also said that we have more doctors per capita than any other province in Canada, Mr. Speaker. I do want to tell the Honourable Member, though, that we do know there are pockets in this province where we need more health care providers. We need, that's why we've, in the current budget, have investment in more collaborative care centres across the province, because we know physicians want to work in a collaborative team. They want to work with nurse practitioners, dietitians. Mr. Speaker, it's my personal view that in some of our communities, social workers should be part of that primary care team to help deal with the issues, determinants of health. So we know there's more work to do within our province, but as he would have read in that report, it's not unique to Nova Scotia. It's something that's going across the entire country.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is well understood, as this crisis has been dealt with, that the number about the per capita number of positions in our province is largely irrelevant to the problem that we're dealing with, because it includes so many physicians whose positions are taken up with hospitals and with research. And so I have asked a question that seems to me very plain and straightforward, and I think it's fair to say that the response that we've received has been furtive and evasive. And so I want to direct the question again to the Premier, this number that there are 20 fewer family physicians practicing in the province than on the day he was sworn into his office. Is this a fact which he considers troubling?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, again, I want to thank the Alderman for the question. Again, I want to send him back to the report to read it. He would recognize, Mr. Speaker, on a per capita basis, we're leading the country in terms of physicians in the province. We recognize, though, there are still areas in our province where we need to continue to make more advancements to ensure that we have the appropriate environment, that we're attracting physicians. I know the Honourable Member know the issue of Digby was been surfaced in this House under successive governments. We now have doctors who are attracted to that community, but we know there are other places. We heard very clearly in the campaign the issue around access to primary health care in Cape Breton. We'll continue to work with those communities, continuing to work with our partners, and hopefully we'll continue to work with members of the opposition so that we continue to make sure that Nova Scotians have access to primary health care in the community where they want to have it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, surely the Premier can recognise that the answer he has provided here is uncomforting in the extreme to the 106,000 people in the province who don't have a doctor at the moment. So it's on behalf of those people that I want to put a final question. On the basis of this new evidence brought forward yesterday by the Canadian Institute for Health Information, I want to ask the Premier, does he share the widely held view now in Nova Scotia that we are in the middle of experiencing a health care crisis?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I want to thank the Alderman for the question. Again, I want to thank all our healthcare partners across the province who continue to work with us to ensure that we're providing primary care in communities across the province. Do we know there are pockets where we need more healthcare providers? Of course we do, Mr. Speaker. It's why we continue to go out, recruit more physicians. It's why we enhance the number of residency seats as part of this budget by 10. There will be an additional 10 above that for foreign-trained doctors who could come to get the Canadian competency here in our province. That will bring an annual complement of 56 in the province. It's one step in many steps that we'll do to continue to ensure that we stabilize and enhance primary health care across our province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, two universities were shortchanged by the funding formula change in 2008, Acadia and Cape Breton University. One was reimbursed for their shortfall, that was Acadia, and one was not, Cape Breton University. In fact, CBU was told repeatedly that there was no money for them at the same time that this government was handing out extra payments to Acadia. And the question is, why, since both were impacted by the same formula change? So I'd like to ask the Premier, can he explain why his government gave extra money to one university but not the other?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. He's right. In 2008, the funding formula impacted both Acadia and Dalhousie in a negative way, Mr. Speaker. In 2012, under the NDP government, they made an agreement with Acadia University that provided them with an advance payment. They continued to make that what we said as a government in 2013 to all university presidents, that we would hold the line, and where they were, there would be no additional funding over and above what was provided to them when we came into power. That's exactly what we did each and every year, Mr. Speaker. What we did this year is we formalized what had been put in place by the former government with Acadia, and in this budget we have $1 million that will be on an ongoing basis that will go to CBU.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the fact is that the previous NDP government gave Acadia University once $3.5 million, but Acadia has had $21.5 million of extra payments under this government, while Cape Breton University has gotten zero, Mr. Speaker, even though they have the exact same problem. In fact, in the last year, Mr. Speaker, in addition to the annual payments, the top-up payments the government made to Acadia, they forgave a SOFI loan in the amount of $7 million, the exact same loan that they forced Cape Breton University to pay back, Mr. Speaker. These two universities with the same problem are being treated very differently. And the government knew that would become obvious when the public accounts were released this summer. So I'd like to ask the Premier, can he tell us when Cape Breton University was told that they would get the $1 million arbitrary payment?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know exactly when they would have been told. I can tell you that as we were going through the budgeting process, I can tell you the members from Cape Breton have raised this issue, continued to go forward. When we got to a point where we could have our situation where we actually had a balance that we could look at the funding formula, that we could deal with the issue, is directly what we did. I don't know exactly when they would have been told. That would have been something that would have happened with the department, but I want to be clear about this issue, Mr. Speaker. In 2013, when Nova Scotians gave up the privilege to be in government, I met personally with all university presidents together. I was very clear with them that we would hold the line on the funding that they receive at this moment in time. And that funding was part of what the agreement that the former government had with Acadia. I said to every one of those universities, you walk with us. We'll walk side by side with you to continue to make sure we enhance your institution. We want you to be more than just the great educational institutions you are. We want you to drive economic development. We've seen tremendous growth. We've seen population growth. And we're seeing, quite frankly, CBU has been doing work. And we're there to work with CBU to continue to make sure we deal with the issue.
The Honourable Member for Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Agriculture. In 2013, the Liberal Party promised to create a strategic plan that will increase the number of new farmers entering the industry. However, we learned in estimates yesterday that government has made next to no progress on this initiative. So I've been thinking, perhaps the legalization of cannabis would be an opportunity to improve that record. So I'd like to ask the minister today, does his department have any plan for how to deal with the legalization of cannabis from a farming perspective?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. It's a very good question. And as the policies are developed around cannabis, we'll be looking at that as a farm product.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be an ever-growing demand for legal cannabis once the federal government follows through on its plan for legalization, which could be as early as next July. This will mean that there will be an economic development opportunity in this new industry. However, according to Health Canada, there are only 35 authorized licensed producers of cannabis in the country and zero in Nova Scotia. So I ask the minister, once it is legalized, is it his plan that Nova Scotia be a net importer of cannabis?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Yes. Again, this is all under review, and until such time that the federal government legalizes it, we'll have to wait and see what the rules are around it at that time.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the fact is that Cape Breton University was informed by phone call just before the public accounts were released that they were going to get a gratuitous $1 million, the first extra funding that they would receive, Mr. Speaker. It's obvious the government knew that their largesse to Acadia would be obvious when the public accounts were released and that Cape Breton University would complain. So they were offered $1 million to be quiet, Mr. Speaker. That's what happened. In fact, no one can figure out how the $1 million was even determined. It's just a big, fat, round number, Mr. Speaker. Is it related to their funding shortfall? No. Was it negotiated? No. Or was it just simply picked out of thin air? So I'd like to ask the Premier, can he tell the House how the $1 million payment to Cape Breton University was determined?
Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to walk him back through history, Mr. Speaker. Acadia University would have been provided funding under the former government. When we came into power, it was there. It was very clear with all university presidents, including the president of CBU at the time, that we would be holding the line on funding. We wouldn't be cutting them like happened in the past. What we said, we'd be holding the line. And when we got to our...
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
I said when we got to the point where we could invest financially in this province, we continue to work with our universities. That's exactly what happened, Mr. Speaker. And this was not a question of keeping anyone quiet. I don't know if the Honourable Member knows the Chair of the Board, who I know. Certainly there is no way if he has an opinion, he'll express that opinion very clearly. He has many times. We believe this was an investment that's fair. We're looking forward to working with CBU on a go-forward basis.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
The fact is, Mr. Speaker, every university was told to hold the line, except one university actually didn't have to hold the line and got a lot of money under this little government, this Liberal government, Mr. Speaker. $21.5 million in the four-year term of this government. Well, Cape Breton University, with the exact same funding problem, got zero, Mr. Speaker. Where is the fairness in that? In fact, the shortfall from the formula that Acadia experienced was $6.5 million. They got $3.5 million per year. The shortfall from CBU, almost the same amount, $6 million. They got zero. Where is the fairness in that? Can the Premier explain why these two universities were treated so differently?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. I want to remind the Honourable Member when we came into power, we had a $500 million deficit that we were dealing with. What we said very clearly to all our partners, we will hold the line. We will not be cutting you. That happened to you in the past, but we'll be holding the line. We expect you to do, quote, increase your student population. We expect you to control costs. In some cases, we expect you to reduce them. We need to expect that you understand the severity of what's happening within this province. We need you to lead, just like this province has done, Mr. Speaker. In this House, time after time, I've continued to put in a fair wage package in this province so we could invest in CBU, so that we could invest in health care, so that we can invest in education. And each and every time they opposed us, Mr. Speaker, to get our fiscal health in order so that we could make the strategic investments that would grow the economy across this province, Mr. Speaker. It's pretty easy, Mr. Speaker.
Order,
it's pretty
please.
Easy to sit over there, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
It's pretty easy to sit over there, Mr. Speaker, and throw stones. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, the one thing our sister organizations can say is that this Premier and this government has been direct and upfront with them and have been partners with them in getting this economy.
Order, please. I'd just like to remind all members, the clock on the wall is for my reference and for your reference, and if somebody is in the middle of a question or an answer, I will reserve the right to be the judge of when to cut them off. So it's... The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government boasts a surplus last year of $150 million, but they don't have the money to treat CBU the same as Acadia University. Mr. Speaker, this is a matter of fairness. Today is a great unfairness outstanding. Acadia got extra money, CBU didn't, even though they were both disadvantaged by the funding formula change. Clearly, the government makes up funding rules as it goes along. My question to the Minister of Labour, Advanced Education, will the minister commit to reimbursing CBU for its shortfall to the same extent that it reimbursed Acadia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the member for the question. Mr. Speaker, the member is right that Acadia and CBU were shortchanged in the last MOU under the Conservative government. They were the only two universities that had funding reduced. Every other university had funding increased.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
It would be my pleasure to answer the question, but I keep getting interrupted. Mr. Speaker, what we did is we looked at all universities under the same lens. Mr. Speaker, we have done financial analysis on all universities. CBU and Acadia University are not equal. They have very much different financial situations. CBU's finances were actually in very good shape. Acadia had some challenges. We helped Acadia meet those challenges, and that was started under the previous NDP government. CBU actually came to us with a request, and what we granted was an amount higher than what they requested. Let me be clear on that, Mr. Speaker. We requested them, we gave them $1 million a year, which was more than what they requested. They were informed of that decision in June, as was Acadia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Mr. Speaker, CBU was told there'd be no extra funding to make do with what they had, and they did the hard choices in cutting some departments and some programs, offering retirements, so they could meet their requirements financially. So don't tell me that they have been treated fairly, that they had money. Clearly, this government makes up the funding rules as it goes along. In this case, politics got in the way of good public policy. It seems to be the trend for this government and this minister, Mr. Speaker. So my question is, can the minister tell us that they will at least agree to treat CBU the same as Acadia, starting with this budget year?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, we treat all universities the same in this province. Mr. Speaker, I'll point out something. The opposition, and if they'd like to listen, they can hear the
order,
answer.
Order, please. Thank the Honourable Member for Northside Westmount will come to order. The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Mr. Speaker, I'll point out something. The opposition has been saying today that CBU received zero in the last 4 years under this government. That is not true. Mr. Speaker, if you actually do look at the extra funding that's been given outside of the MOU, CBU's received approximately $18 million. We have funded programs that have helped this province, such as the nursing program, which that member keeps getting up and saying, Cape Breton needs doctors, nurses. Well, we've done that, Mr. Speaker, and we did it outside of the MOU with more funding.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, domestic assault is a very serious matter. And when a woman has the bravery and confidence to tell her story in public that she has been the victim of domestic assault, and she is told by a member of the government that the Premier contacted all the women's centres of the province before making a hiring decision, she deserves to know if that is true. Mr. Speaker, I've asked the Premier repeatedly whether he did, in fact, contact the women's centres of the province in this case or not. And I think that Ms. Coffin deserves a straight answer. So I'd like to ask the Premier, very specifically, did he call women's centres in this case or did he not?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think if he goes back to when he asked me this question at the beginning, I said at the very beginning, a former minister who was responsible for the status of women, Mr. Speaker, would have been maybe perhaps who he was referring to, not the Premier. But I do want to answer this question. This is an important issue for our province, Mr. Speaker. Domestic violence for too long has not been talked about, for too long, quite frankly, has not been invested in a strategy by governments of all political stripes. We came into power in 2013. We've continued to invest to build a strategy around domestic violence. We've put more money, quite frankly, in our budget this year to build on the good work that had taken place by the status of women and women's organizations across this province. We're going to continue to make those investments in this current budget. There's investments in housing to ensure that women who are fleeing domestic violence have safe environments for them and their children. And we'll continue, Mr. Speaker, to make sure that this issue, Mr. Speaker, is on the minds of all Nova Scotians, because everyone in this province deserves to feel safe in their own home and in their community and in their workplace.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, a government that takes domestic assault seriously would not make up stories in the middle of an election campaign to try and get the vote of a woman who was the victim of a proven domestic assault. That is the issue. Mr. Speaker, I don't have any doubt that the Premier takes this issue seriously. I want him to prove that he takes it seriously by answering my question. Everything he said is great, but it did not answer the question. And Ms. Coffin deserves the truth. She deserves the truth. Are the women's centres right that they were not contacted? And that, in fact, the member for Halifax Siddle Island made up that story? Or did the Premier, in fact, call those women's centres in this case?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, I want to go back to the question. I've answered it the very first time he asked me the question. I just answered it the second time he asked me the question. I'll answer it again for him, Mr. Speaker. What I said to him, Mr. Speaker, was a minister of our government who was responsible for that file, if he goes back and looks at the media stuff that they were referring to, not the Premier, who would have reached out. But on top of all that, Mr. Speaker, there's no question this issue is a serious issue, not only for Ms. Coffin, but for all women, Mr. Speaker, and all people in this province, Mr. Speaker. And even, quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, it's a serious issue for men in this province, quite frankly. We need to continue to do and make sure that we continue to invest in the strategies that we have as a government. We'll continue to do so, Mr. Speaker. We'll continue to make sure that when there's women and children fleeing from domestic violence, that they have a safe place to come to. It's why we're going to continue to make investments in second-stage housing, and we're going to continue to work with our partners across this province to ensure that this province is safe.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North.
Mr. Speaker, since 2013, the number of hours of short-term illness among social workers in child protection and child, youth and family services has increased by more than 9,500 hours. Yesterday, I asked the Minister of Community Services how many additional social workers would be hired this year to address burnout among those frontline workers. While the Minister didn't answer directly, what she said sounded an awful lot like zero. Mr. Speaker, once again, I will give the Minister of Community Services an opportunity to tell this House how many additional social workers will be hired this year.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to commend our social workers. They do very difficult work. They do very important work. What we do know is that case complexity has been increasing over the last while, so we've taken a number of steps, Mr. Speaker, to make sure that we can respond to this issue quickly. For example, we now have a hiring pool so that we don't have to go out and advertise each time we need a social worker. We can actually draw from that hiring pool, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, I do want the honourable member to know that we have been meeting with social workers. We have been meeting with the union to work on this particular issue and to make sure that our social workers get the support that they need.
The honourable member for Dartmouth North.
Mr. Speaker, the 2017 survey of Nova Scotia government employees found that only 45% of employees in the Department of Community Services feel their workload is reasonable. Only 35% were satisfied with their department, down 12 points from 2015. Only 32% said that they felt valued as a government of Nova Scotia employee. And I'll table that. Oops, sorry. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Community Services agree that this government's broad disrespect for public sector workers has contributed to burnout among frontline workers in her department?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I want to thank the Honourable Member, and I do want to let our social workers and the employees of Community Services know that we value their services. One thing that I used to say when I was the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education is that change is hard. And sometimes when there's change going on in a department, it can make people nervous. I want to assure the Honourable Member that we are working with our staff to make sure that they understand what the process is going to be around transformation, and this will be a walk that we walk with them. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland North.
Mr. Speaker, earlier the Premier stated this morning that we have more doctors per capita here in Nova Scotia. I want to remind him that we have several regional hospitals that serve all of the Maritimes, like the IWK, the Rehab Centre, the VG. We also have the Dal Med School, which has a high number of academia physicians. The Chi High report that was released shows we are the only province in Canada that have a decrease in the number of physicians in our province. We have a responsibility to serve the people of Nova Scotia. Question to the Premier is, when will his government take responsibility for this problem and work to reverse the out-migration of physicians in this province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, Mr. Speaker. She would also know, Mr. Speaker, that the numbers where we were starting were much different than other Canadian provinces. But if she would have followed, I'm sure, the news yesterday, the very case she just made about Dal Medical School, people working at different levels of practice. I made the same case out there outside to the media. Don't forget the IWK, which is the Regional Children's and Women's Hospital in the province, where we have a tremendous number of people here. We also got a medical school where we have physicians. There's no question. We know there are issues in our province. We know that they will continue to work with our communities, continue to try to put together what we believe is the kind of environment where we're going to be able to attract and retain those health care providers that I know she's passionate about in her area, trying to retain them. We're working with our communities, and we'll continue to do so. We know there's more work to do, and we're here to work with those organizations to ensure that people have access to primary health care in their community.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland North.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think it's helpful to make a statement that we have more doctors per capita than any other province. We need to deal with the problem, we need to deal with the issue, and help the people of this province. A survey from Doctors Nova Scotia revealed that 70% of Nova Scotia doctors feel burnout, and the relationship with the Nova Scotia Health Authority was a contributing factor. Question to the Minister of Health, is there a lot of reasons for doctors leaving this province? What is the Minister going to do to improve relations between doctors and the Nova Scotia Health Authority?
The Honourable Premier.
I would absolutely agree with the Honourable Member. It's unhelpful to throw out statistics, but I do want to go back to the question that was asked by the leader of the New Democratic Party and one by the current member who just asked the question. They actually used the same report to throw out statistics. All I did was quote the same report that they're quoting. Quite frankly, if you want to use statistics, it would be helpful, quite frankly, if we knew where the number was last year and where we are today in comparison to other provinces, instead of throwing out a number. Fact of the matter is, this is a very complicated problem that we have across the province. We know there are pockets where we're working very hard to try to achieve it. We know, and I quite frankly, there's another looming problem in our province when it comes to physicians. We have a number of them who are 70 years old, still practicing. When they decide to leave under fee-for-service, what happens? So where we may have communities now that feel like they're fully serviced, in 2 years from now, that issue is going to surface in their community. It's why we need to continue to attract as many healthcare providers as we can. It's why we need to broaden the scope of collaborative care practices to ensure that all our healthcare providers are responding to the needs of our citizens.
Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, Cape Bretoners learned earlier this week that two psychiatrists that were supposed to come to the island will not be coming. And this is bad news for the people who need their services. But it's also bad news for the psychiatrists already practicing in Cape Breton. A survey produced by Doctors Nova Scotia shows that the psychiatry community is feeling unsupported and abandoned because of the poor relationship with the health authority. For instance, they were not consulted about a decision to merge addiction and mental health services, a decision they oppose and think is working poorly. My question for the minister is quite simple. Will the minister admit that the actions of the health authority are making it more difficult for psychiatrists to stay in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for this important question. What I can assure the member, when I was in Cape Breton, I met with a number of the psychiatrists, the lead psychiatrist for the hospital there, Mr. Speaker. We shared his concerns at that time. That was before knowing that the most recent development with the intended new recruits that chose to not, for personal reasons, not to follow through with their intention to practice there. But, Mr. Speaker, the concern he raised about the amalgamation of the mental health and addictions, that's contrary. That's information that was not disclosed to me in that meeting. And I assure you, I asked that exact question as I went around the province meeting with mental health and addictions workers at regional hospitals and hospitals across the province. And I asked each one of them what they thought of that process. And in every case, without exception, they said that that was the appropriate thing and was a good move for the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Doctors Nova Scotia's community listening tour did not get that information. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, that government said that there would be a doctor for every Nova Scotia when they ran in this province, and it has not happened. And now we see people who need services and can't get them. Mr. Speaker, do you know that in Cape Breton, it takes 14 months, 425 days to get an appointment with a psychiatrist? The Doctors Nova Scotia report provided some insight into that long wait. In May, the report was made that 500 patient referrals, 500, Mr. Speaker, were left sitting on a desk, untouched, from January till May. So the question is, will the minister admit that the poor relationship between the health authority, his government, and the Cape Breton psychiatrists is contributing to poor service for people who need it today, not 10 years down the road, not 3 years down the road, today, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. As I've stated a number of times, the topic and the concerns around primary health care, but in particular mental health services, Mr. Speaker, in Cape Breton and right across this province are very important, Mr. Speaker. They're very challenging circumstances for the individuals, the families, our community members who require these services, Mr. Speaker. The efforts being made, I think, from the Nova Scotia Health Authority were demonstrated where they focused to recruit new psychiatrists for the Cape Breton region, Mr. Speaker. They had psychiatrists lined up for personal reasons. They've indicated that they're not going to follow through with that. So that work, Mr. Speaker, is ongoing. The commitment and the attention being provided by the Health Authority in those recruitment efforts, they see the problem, Mr. Speaker. They're working hard to fulfill those positions, provide the services. Thank you.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for... Oh. Apologies. The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, Open Arms is a Christian ministry that has been operating an emergency shelter in Kentville for almost 15 years. Over the years, they have provided shelter for about 1,300 individuals, relying on a small group of volunteers. These volunteers are dwindling, Mr. Speaker. In 15 years, Open Arms has never received government funding, but now they need it, and their request has been denied. My question for the Minister of Community Services, why won't the minister fund Open Arms, an organization that is filling a real need in our community?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I'd be happy to sit down with him and learn more about the work they do. I do believe he has put in a submission on that, but we'll be happy to sit down and discuss that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister for that, and I look forward to sitting down and discussing this with her. Mr. Speaker, the people who operate Open Arms believe they can operate a year-round emergency shelter with a paid coordinator for less than $80,000, and I say that's good value for money. My question again to the Minister is, if the lack of funding forces Open Arms to close its emergency shelter, what does the Minister expect homeless people who rely on Open Arms services to do?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I want to thank the Honourable Member and let him know that we are committing more funding to housing again this year, and I'm happy to sit down with him, as I said, to talk this issue through. The funding is not endless, and there are a number of groups around this province, Mr. Speaker, who do want funding. So I can't make any promises, but I'm happy to sit down with him.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Needham.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister of Natural Resources why her department did not consult Parks Canada before approving a large clear cut next to Kejimkujik National Park. The Minister said that while she had heard about the situation, she wasn't aware of the Parks Canada briefing note I referenced. This is troubling, Mr. Speaker. I am concerned that the Minister and her department have not rectified the situation and that it may happen again. As the minister committed yesterday to look into this, I'd like to ask her again, why did her department keep Parks Canada in the dark about the proposed clear cut next to Kedgy?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite for the question again today. As I referenced yesterday, I certainly wasn't aware of the situation at that time, but measures have been taken to rectify that situation to make sure that it doesn't happen again. You know, most approvals now are crossing my desk for approval. I have final eyes on every cut that's happening in the province, so in the end, the responsibility will be up to me to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Needham.
Mr. Speaker, the Tobiatic Wildlife Management Area, or the Game Sanctuary as it is also known, is mapped as biodiversity-rich landscape under the Western Crown Lands Plan, where the dominant value is conservation. However, according to the department's online harvest map, there are two planned harvests inside the sanctuary, including a clear cut. As I understand it, this would be the first planned logging within the sanctuary since the province acquired the lands from Bowater in 2012. So I ask the minister, why is she allowing clear cutting to take place inside a game sanctuary?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, and I thank the Honourable Member for that question again. Certainly, that's something I'm going to look into to find out. I believe that she is mistaken. I can't imagine there would be any kind of foresting within forestry processes within a game sanctuary, but it's something I will look into and follow up.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Muscadabit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Daycare operators in the province, like the one in Brookfield, my hometown, are scrambling to understand and to work around the implementation of the pre-primary program. It has been mentioned that the first phase of the program is implemented in underserved areas, and the consultations are planned this fall for current daycare operators. Question is, what are the plans to work with and attempt to integrate current daycare operators into the pre-primary system?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question. The issue right now that we're trying to address is that one in four children are accessing these critical programs, Mr. Speaker. And I know that every early childhood educator knows the impact that they can have on the lives of the children that they're able to touch through these services. There is a capacity issue. So in terms of cost effectiveness of delivering this program, using our school system where the infrastructure is in place is absolutely critical. If we did look at expanding the private sector to cover 100% of children, we would have to build new spaces, Mr. Speaker. Also, the evidence is pretty clear that by using our school systems, by having four-year-olds actually on site in the schools that they will potentially attend, actually is a much better way to help them transition socially into that new environment.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
The Brookfield Preschool has already lost six spots to the pre-primary program this year. Others have lost qualified educators as well. These daycare operators desperately need their questions answered. So when are the consultations being scheduled for daycare operators, and how will government ensure these educators both know about and can access these meetings?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The member is absolutely right. You know, this sector is absolutely vital to provide services to our families and to provide the wide breadth of services that we need for our children before they enter the school age. We have a vested interest in this sector. The province invests in this sector to the tune of $55 million a year. We are negotiating funding agreements with the federal government that will see us invest further dollars into that sector to expand them and support them. And we do recognize that the reality of a new universally free pre-primary program for four-year-olds will create pressures on their business model, Mr. Speaker, which is why we've moved forward thoughtfully for phase one. We've only heard from approximately 3 out of 384 that have had impacts on staffing. That is because of our thoughtful approach to this. We had recently had private providers come in, speak with our consultant before we actually go out in the field, and they feel very good about the questions that we're going to be asking on their behalf to parents and the public.
The Honourable Member for Oh Harbour Eastern Passage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you may be aware, the Cole Harbour Eastern Passage constituency that I represent does not have a single family doctor. During the 2017 provincial election, the constituents of Cole Harbour and Eastern Passage were told by the Liberal candidate that we were getting a collaborative health centre. As I have received 5 calls just in the past week and numerous calls over the past 3 months by constituents who have lost their family doctor, can the Minister of Health please tell me yes or no? Is this Liberal government going to honour that promise to the constituents of Cole Harbour Eastern Passage?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the member bringing this question forward on behalf of her constituents, obviously a very important one for them. As we all know, Mr. Speaker, we've committed not just from a policy perspective approach that recognized collaborative care practices are a good way to help expand expand the primary care services in our communities to the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, and her community and other communities. We've committed over $9 million, Mr. Speaker, towards collaborative practices moving forward this year. Those specific sites haven't yet been announced, but Mr. Speaker, when they are, I'll be sure to let the member there know if her community is on that list. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cole Harbour Eastern Passage.
Mr. Speaker, I am a little confused, I must confess, because my understanding from what I've read in the budget is that the budget for collaborative health centres was $6 million, and that there were two identified in the books, Shelburne and New Waterford. So it does not list my constituency, so I want to know whether my constituency got left off by accident, and we can just pencil it in, or if it in fact is not getting a collaborative health centre. As promised. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, the work that we're ongoing to provide additional collaborative care practices across the province, Mr. Speaker. The work that's being done, Mr. Speaker, to identify exactly what and how the practitioners wish to collaborate in those centres to provide the best primary care services that they can to the people of Nova Scotia. I believe the member referenced comments and commitments made by the former member for her community. My understanding, Mr. Speaker, is the commitments that were made at that time was that the member would be working towards that. And Mr. Speaker, as a government, we continue to work to establish collaborative care practices throughout the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Beaver Bank.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. On Wednesday, a constituent brought me a letter that they had received from Stock Transportation dated on September 26, 2017, and I will table that, stating that their children will no longer be receiving courtesy busing. Mr. Speaker, this year, courtesy busing and busing issues have been, I've been contacted more about those issues than any other time, even on Halifax Regional Council. We are a month into the school year, and students and parents are now being informed that they have to rush around to deal with this cut to courtesy busing. My question is, regardless if we're talking about mandatory or courtesy busing, is it acceptable for parents and guardians to receive 4 weeks or to receive notice 4 weeks into school year on an issue like transportation?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Speaker, I appreciate the question. We also have received a number of concerns in the HRM area in relation to busing. We have reached out through staff to the school board to discuss the issues. They have assured us that they're working their way through the process. I know that there are some communities that may still be affected, but that number has been reduced significantly based on when this first came to our attention. And at heart and center of this, Mr. Speaker, is the health and safety of our children. So if the member does have any information in terms of routes that children are required to take for walking, if those are safe or unsafe, I'd be very happy to take that information and act upon it.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Beaver Bank.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his remarks. Mr. Speaker, parents have expressed their concerns with the maximum distance that the province and school boards are setting for walking and busing. Distance are set provincially. Sometimes there are lesser distances set by the school board, but they need to be reviewed, Mr. Speaker. Decisions that are made last minute like this are leaving people scrambling transportation for their kids. So my question is, would the minister commit to at least reviewing the distance that the school boards are set for busing? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The issue, first and foremost, I believe, is around safety. I do not think it's a matter of distance. There's many out there that would argue that having our children walk to school is a healthy exercise, but of course we want those pedestrian routes to be safe for our kids because we want them getting to school and back home safely. So for me, this is a question of safety, and again, if there are routes that we are concerned about, I would like to know where they are so that we can properly address those safety concerns if they do exist. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The time allotted for members' questions put to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that you do now leave the chair and the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole on supply.
The House will now go into a period of 45 minutes for debate going into supply. The Honourable Member for King's South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the House for the opportunity to stand up and share a few thoughts today. I had the honour...
Order, please. The Honourable Member for King's South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had the honour and privilege to be invited to the...
Order, please. The House will recess for a minute or two to give people a chance to settle in here, perhaps.